Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we're tackling a really big one. We're looking at Baruch Spinoza, a truly radical thinker, through the eyes of the philosopher Roger Scruton in his detailed study. This isn't just, you know, history. Spinoza built a whole system meant to change how you see everything.
Absolutely. Spinoza's right there at this fascinating point in history, early modern thought meeting the Enlightenment. And he asks this huge question. If we, let's say, set aside a personal God and assume the universe just runs on necessary natural laws, where does that leave us? How do we find freedom or ethics or any meaning?
Yeah, that's the core tension Scruton explores, isn't it? He shows how Spinoza meticulously built this logical system, almost like a secular path to, well, salvation maybe. And it's still seen as this profound counterpoint to modern anxieties, to nihilism.
So our mission today is really to unpack how Spinoza tried to square that circle, our deep-seated feeling of freedom, with the cold, hard reality of natural necessity.
Before we get into Spinoza's system, though, it helps to understand our guide here, Roger Scruton. He lived 1944 to 2020, a really well-known conservative philosopher, incredibly prolific, wrote over 50 books, I think, taught at Birkbeck College for a long time.
Okay, but wait a second. A conservative philosopher digging deep into one of the most radical, maybe even atheistic, thinkers of the 17th century? That seems surprising. Why Scruton on Spinoza?
It does seem odd at first glance, yeah. But Scruton had this deep appreciation for the structure of thought, the architecture of a philosophical system. He wasn't just looking to debunk Spinoza. He admired the coherence, the intellectual power of it.
Ah, okay.
Scruton himself valued objective truth and order. So he saw Spinoza's deterministic world as this massive attempt to ground morality and meaning, objectively not in God's commands, but in the very fabric of reality.
So it wasn't despite the radical ideas, but almost because of their systematic ambition. He saw it as an alternative to just saying everything's relative.
Exactly. Scruton was brilliant at connecting the dots, you know?
Yeah.
Linking dense philosophy to lived experience, to that sort of spiritual hunger that Spinoza was also trying to address, just in a completely secular way.
Right. Let's dive into the book's core argument then. Scruton essentially says Spinoza built this complete rational system where happiness, blessedness, whatever you call it, comes purely through reason. It's meant to replace faith.
And the bedrock of it all is this absolutely startling claim. Radical monism. There's only one substance, just one thing. And that thing is God or nature.
That phrase alone, I mean, in the 1600s, that's like setting off a philosophical bomb, right? It just dissolves all the usual divisions. God's separate from the world, mind separate from body. No God sitting outside reality pulling strings.
Nope. Everything that is, was, or will be is part of this single, infinite, self-causing reality.
And Scruton really emphasizes that the goal of Spinoza's big work, The Ethics, is to show us the path to true freedom. But here's the kicker. The really hard part. Spinoza says free will, as we usually think of it, is an illusion. Everything is determined. Absolutely everything follows from necessary causes.
Right. So liberation, freedom, it doesn't come from making choices out of thin air. It comes from understanding, achieving an adequate understanding of why things have to be the way they are, including ourselves.
We're free when we intellectually grasp our own constraints. That sounds, well, incredibly challenging, maybe even a bit bleak.
It can sound that way initially.
Let's look at the man himself. Scruton delves into his life, right? Because his biography seems crucial here.
Oh, absolutely. Spinoza's life story is key. He was born in Amsterdam, part of this thriving Portuguese Jewish community. But his thinking just diverged too radically from orthodox beliefs.
Like what specifically?
Things like rejecting the immortality of the soul, questioning if God had a personality. Really fundamental stuff. And the community's reaction was severe. In 1656, he faced the cherem.
The excommunication.
And it wasn't just a slap on the wrist. It was total. Cursed by name, cast out completely from his community, his family, everything.
That sounds devastating, like total social death. But Scruton sees it differently.
He does. Scruton argues this harsh rejection didn't crush Spinoza. In a way, it liberated him. Suddenly, he owed nothing to dogma or tradition. His only master was reason. He lived simply grinding lenses for a living, which is kind of poetic, right? Clarifying vision.
Yeah, that is fitting. And this isolation fueled the ethics.
It seems so. And the ethics itself is structured incredibly rigorously, like Euclid's geometry. Definitions, axioms, propositions, all leading, Spinoza believed, to conclusions as certain as math.
Because he thought reality itself had this inherent logical structure.
Precisely. That the mind, using reason correctly, could perfectly map onto it.
Okay, so if there's only one big reality, this substance, what are we? What am I?
We are modes. Finite, temporary modifications of the substance. Scruton used the analogy, think of the ocean as the substance. A single wave is a mode. The wave is definitely real, you see it, it has effects, but it can't exist apart from the ocean. It is the ocean in a particular, temporary form.
Got it. And this monism, this one-substance idea, let him tackle that huge philosophical headache left by Descartes, the mind-body problem.
Ah, yes, Cartesian dualism. Yeah. If mind, thinking stuff, and body, physical stuff, are fundamentally different, how on earth do they interact? How does a thought make my arm move?
Spinoza's answer, this parallelism doctrine, Scruton explains. It's pretty elegant, isn't it?
It really is. He basically says, mind and body aren't two different things fighting to connect. They're two different ways of understanding the same underlying reality. Two attributes of the one substance thought and extension.
Like reading the same story in two different languages simultaneously. The plot unfolds in parallel, but one language isn't causing the other. They're both expressing the same core narrative.
That's a fantastic analogy. Exactly. Mm. Spinoza put it very neatly. The order and connection of ideas is the same as the order and connection of things. It brings mind, consciousness, right back into the natural world. No spooky ghosts in the machine.
Okay, so where modes, mind, and body are parallel aspects, how does our inner life, our psychology, fit into this deterministic picture? Scruton talks about the conatus, right?
Yes, the conatus is absolutely central. It's the fundamental striving inherent in everything, every mode, to persevere in its own being, to keep going, basically. It's like a universal principle of self-preservation and self-affirmation.
But we don't always feel like we're successfully persevering. We get overwhelmed, we suffer. Spinoza talks about human bondage.
Right. Bondage, for Spinoza, means being ruled by passive emotions. These are feelings like fear, anger, envy, sadness, things that feel like they happen to us from the outside. And crucially, they arise from inadequate ideas.
Inadequate ideas, meaning we don't properly understand what's causing the emotion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We misunderstand the true causes, often blaming external things or people, when the reality is a complex chain of necessity involving both external events and our own internal nature, our conatus. So suffering, in a way, is a cognitive error. It's a failure to understand adequately.
So if I'm stuck in traffic and fuming, that road rage is a passive emotion born from an inadequate idea like, that idiot cut me off. Huh. Instead of adequately understanding the whole deterministic system of traffic patterns, city planning, other drivers' conatus, and my own reaction.
Precisely. You're focusing on a partial, misleading cause.
Which brings us back to freedom. If everything's determined, how do we escape this bondage? Scruton emphasizes Spinoza's core ethical move. Freedom is the recognition of necessity.
Sounds paradoxical, but yeah, liberation comes from transforming those passive emotions, the ones that push you around, into active emotions.
Okay, but how? How does just recognizing necessity change the feeling? If I understand why I'm angry, does the anger just vanish?
Not necessarily vanish instantly, but it changes its character. By gaining adequate knowledge, you see the event not as an isolated personal affront, but as an inevitable part of the infinitely complex causal web of nature of God. You shift from a narrow reactive viewpoint to a broader, more understanding perspective.
So the anger maybe loses its personal sting. It becomes less about me being wronged and more about this is how things necessarily unfolded.
That's the idea. The focus shifts from blame and resentment towards understanding the system. This leads, ultimately, to the highest state Spinoza described, the amor Dei intellectualis.
The intellectual love of God.
Yeah, and it's not warm, fuzzy feelings for a personal deity. Scruton explains it as this profound state of serene joy, almost bliss, that comes from grasping the eternal, necessary order of the whole universe, God or nature, and understanding your own necessary place within it.
It's the joy of understanding itself.
The highest form of joy, Leticia, yeah. Yes. When you reach that state, personal ups and downs, fortune and misfortune, they just don't have the same power over you. You see them as necessary parts of the whole.
I still wrestle with that a bit. If something truly terrible happens, like losing someone you love, does understanding its necessity really offer comfort? Isn't that quite cold?
It's a fair question. Scruton points out that Spinoza isn't denying the reality of pain or grief. Those are passive emotions linked to our finitude, our inadequate understanding in the moment. But the amor Dei intellectualis is presented as a greater, more stable, more powerful active emotion. It's the joy derived from the mind's highest activity understanding truth. This act of joy can, over time, diminish the power of the passive suffering. It doesn't erase it, but it contextualizes it within a larger understood reality.
Okay, that helps clarify it. It's not about not feeling, but about cultivating a deeper, more resilient kind of positive state through understanding.
Precisely. And this whole philosophical system had very real-world political implications too, didn't it?
Oh, definitely. Scruton highlights how Spinoza's thought is a cornerstone of modern secular democracy. Spinoza argued quite forcefully that the state's main job is simply to provide peace and security.
So people can do what?
So they can pursue reason. He was a fierce defender of freedom of thought and expression. His argument was basically, trying to control what people believe is not only tyrannical, it's stupid, it's impossible in the long run, and it just breeds resentment and instability.
Because you can't really force belief.
Right. Scruton frames it like Spinoza was telling governments, your job is to maintain order so rational people can figure things out. Real stability only comes from people freely consenting based on reason, not from being forced to pretend they believe something.
That sounds incredibly modern. Okay, let's try to pull together the big themes Scruton identifies in Spinoza's work. First, that unity of reality, the monism.
Yeah, this core idea that everything, mind, body, God, nature, it's all interconnected, all part of one single substance. The implication Scruton draws out is that this potentially overcomes feelings of alienation. We're not separate sparks lost in the cosmos. We're integral, necessary parts of the whole. It kind of puts our small anxieties in perspective, doesn't it?
It really does. Then there's a tough one. Determinism and the rejection of free will. Everything happens necessarily. We don't have the kind of freedom we usually assume.
That clashes hard with our gut feelings, our sense of agency. But Scruton suggests there's a flip side, a benefit. If you can truly accept that things couldn't have happened differently, it can actually reduce anxiety, regret, blame. That whole cycle of if only. You shift focus from wishing the past were different to understanding why it was what it was.
Mm-hmm. Third thing, reason as liberation. Knowledge isn't just abstract, it's power. Specifically, the power to free ourselves from being slaves to those passive emotions.
So if you feel consumed by, say, jealousy, the Spinozist approach Scruton describes is to rationally analyze its roots, the inadequate ideas, the perceived threats, the underlying conatus, and through that understanding, the emotion itself loses its destructive grip. It makes philosophy a very practical tool for emotional management.
And that connects to the final theme, the naturalization of value. Ethics, meaning what's good or bad, it's all grounded in nature and what helps or hinders human flourishing, our conatus, not in commands from a supernatural being.
Which gives us a solid basis for morality, even in a completely secular world, right?
Blah.
Focusing on what genuinely helps people thrive, based on understanding our nature.
Exactly. Now, Spinoza's writing, especially in the Ethics with its geometrical style, produced some really memorable, concise ideas. Scruton kicks out a few key ones.
Right, like the foundational phrase, Deus in natura.
God or nature, meaning God isn't some separate creator dude. God is the totality of reality, operating according to eternal rational laws, immanent, not transcendent.
Then there's that line about life and death. The free person thinks least of all of death, and his wisdom is a meditation not on death, but on life.
Yes, Scruton reads this as deeply life-affirming. True wisdom isn't morbid. It's focused on enhancing our power, our joy, our ability to persevere now, in line with our basic drive, the conatus. Live fully, understand deeply, don't obsess over the end.
And that fascinating psychological insight, hatred is increased by being reciprocated, and can, on the other hand, be destroyed by love.
Scruton stresses this isn't just, you know, nice advice. For Spinoza, it's like a law of emotional physics. These feelings operate by predictable principles. Understanding this gives us real leverage to change negative cycles, especially in relationships. Love, in this context, means understanding and affirmation.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the most central paradox. True freedom is not the absence of necessity, but the understanding of it.
That really sums up his ethical vision, doesn't it? Liberation comes not from escaping the chains of cause and effect you can't, but from understanding intellectually how those chains work and accepting your part in them. It's freedom through understanding constraint.
Okay, let's bring this down to earth. How can we actually use these ideas? Scruton's analysis points towards practical applications, like for emotional intelligence.
Right. Take something like chronic anxiety about work. A Spinozist approach, guided by Scruton, would say, okay, this anxiety is a passive emotion. What's the inadequate idea fueling it? Maybe it's my boss wants to fire me, or I'm going to fail.
Okay.
The next step is to seek adequate knowledge.
Yeah.
Analyze the situation rationally. What are the real deterministic factors? Maybe it's company-wide pressure. Maybe it's a mismatch between your skills and the role. Maybe it's your own perfectionism, part of your conatus expressing itself perhaps counterproductively.
And once you understand the real systemic causes,
the passive anxiety can start to transform into active emotions. Like, okay, now I see the real issues. I can think strategically about how to address them. Or maybe I develop determination to improve a skill. Or even just acceptance of factors I can't control, which itself reduces the anxiety's power.
Which links to another application, finding freedom and acceptance, just really internalizing that what's done is done, what happens, happens necessarily.
It sounds simple, but it's profound. If you stop wasting mental energy raging against the inevitable or regretting the unchangeable past, you free up so much energy to focus on what you can understand and maybe influence now. It builds resilience.
And finally, interpersonal relationships. If you apply Spinoza's determinism, that person driving you crazy, well, their behavior also stems from necessary causes, from their own conatus and circumstances.
Right. Scruton suggests this perspective shifts you from moralistic blaming, you're bad, to something more like scientific understanding. Why are they acting this way? What causes are at play? It doesn't mean you excuse harmful behavior, but it encourages trying to understand the roots rather than just reacting with anger or hatred. It aims for mutual understanding based on shared reason.
So as we wrap up, what's the big takeaway from Scruton's deep dive into Spinoza? For me, it's that powerful vision of a completely rational yet deeply meaningful secular spirituality. Spinoza shows, maybe more rigorously than anyone, how you can find ethical grounding and even a sense of blessedness entirely through understanding the natural world and our place in it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the insight I hope listeners take away is that challenging, maybe even uncomfortable idea that seeking truth, real, hard, rational understanding isn't separate from seeking happiness. For Spinoza, they are ultimately the same path. It demands a lot intellectually, this path of understanding necessity, but Scruton paints it as leading to a unique and profound kind of joy and freedom.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.